It is 4 a.m. This is WQXR, New York Public Radio on 105.9 FM. WQXR is listener-supported radio. Their classical music deserves a home on the dial. WQXR is now commercial-free and listener-supported classical music station operating as a service of New York Public Radio. We rely on your contributions. Listener contributions keep WQXR alive and thriving and support the entire New York Public Radio family of services, ensuring that we can continue to bring you the best news, cultural, and music programming available on the air. When you pledge online, you save WQXR time and money, so more of your contributions goes towards the music you love. It is the most cost-effective way to support WQXR and the entire New York Public Radio family. You pledge online, it's simple, secure, and swift. WQXR is supported by Carnegie Hall. Join us on May 5 to commemorate the 120th anniversary of Carnegie Hall with an all-star concert at this one-night-only gala event. The New York Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Alan Gilbert, featuring works by Dvorak, Beethoven, Allington, and Gershwin. Gala attendees will enjoy prime concert seating as well as a dinner dance at Plaza with all the artists. Gala tickets include a seat at the concert and admission to a post-concert dinner dance at the Plaza. Place your reservation online or call the special events office at 212-903-9679.
This is Seth Whitman for WQXR Radio, and tonight we are talking with the French filmmaker Michel-Antoine Seurat about his short documentation Rainy Day with George Gabin's Hamilton from 1978, which used the wonderful music by Bill Evans on acoustic and electric piano, with orchestra conducted by Michel Léonard. The weather today will be mostly sunny in the mid-50s, and right now it's 42 in Central Park. Bill Evans from his legendary album From Left to Right from 1970, which was also used by the French filmmaker Michel-Antoine Seurat in his 1978 documentary A Rainy Day with George Karp in East Hampton. The 17-minute short documentary about the long-forgotten American minimalist artist George Karp is the last existing copy of this film and now in possession of the George Karp and Steve Elliott Research Center and displayed to the public for the first time. We are now going to talk with Michel-Antoine Seurat about this day in East Hampton with George Karp. Mr. Seurat, when we learned about the discovery of the short documentary, we were absolutely surprised. It seems that nobody had any knowledge about this private and intimate film of the life of George Karp.
Maybe because it was never displayed in a gallery or a museum. I guess so. In fact, I didn't want anyone to see this little film after what had happened during the recording in 1978, and by the consequences I had to follow by the orders of George Karp. So I simply forgot about it and remembered it when I saw one of the animation films made by George and Steve. Why, you can say it was Steve who did the work on that films at the Centre Georges Pompidou in Paris in January this year. It was like an old door opened slowly to the past with strange noise. Because you must know that when I left the States in 1980 and returned to Paris, that all my thoughts about being a filmmaker were left behind too. So I didn't follow the career of George Karp in the years after, and I was surprised about what I learned when I started to research after seeing that animation film. It's called The Connection Between Form and Sound, number 15, that is also made in 1978, if I'm right, and it's a beautiful piece. I remember that in 1978 and the year before, when We met the first time. George and Steve had been very busy. A lot of exhibitions and like that, and it was hard to catch them. That's one of the reasons why it took me nearly 1 year to get this meeting with him in East Hampton.
The private material of the life of George Cobb and Steve Elliott has nearly vanished since 1986. For the public and the George Cobb Research Center, the discovery of your film was very interesting and valuable. Also, the form of the film is quite unique. There is no spoken comment, no original sound, except in the beginning during the drive to Long Island. Is that why you choose to start the film with three text frames, the preface by the director, as you call it by yourself?
Yes. In the preface, I explain why the film looks like it looks and the difficulties I had with Georges during the filming. He was very unpleasant in the beginning and at the end. And in the middle, it was quite different. You can see that when play around with his own 8mm camera. So it all started strange. When we arrived, he didn't want to let us in. Of course, he had forgotten our meeting. He just came out and said, hello, Steve is not present and that he's working. So we had to wait or come back another day. It was really strange. But what could we do? So we went in the park behind the studio, and it's a beautiful park with all trees. So we started to make some shots, but it started to rain slowly, but then it turned into a little storm, and George still didn't want to let us in. So we took a cover under an old tree and continued recording. It was somehow very beautiful too, but it was close to. I was close to stop the whole undertaking. And then, after the weather cleared up, George was in a better mood, and he explained us the rules for his studio. No talking and all that stuff. And I thought this isn't going to work. But my friend and assistant Pierre Moulin convinced me to stay, so we agreed. But you mentioned the form of the film, and I want to say something about that. The music, as you said, from Bill Evans, and it's the LP From Left to Right from 1969. George gave it to me with a comment to use this only for the background sound. I wasn't allowed by his statement to use the original sound of the tape, so which I hardly agreed to, but I gave in. In that time, I didn't want to have any trouble with him, maybe because of his tempo that was hardly to control. So I choose to give it a try, and it fits in perfectly. I think today he wasn't wrong in saying that the film should speak for itself. And if you follow the line of the film and what happened, then the music really makes sense. You can call it a happy accident.
You marked out the temper of George Cobb. During the film, we can see how his mood changes. How can you describe the day under this aspect?
Well, it was unforeseeable how he would react on any issue. For example, the moment when he played with his 8mm camera. It was after he made a pause and had a coffee. Then he suddenly took his camera and started to record us. I have never seen the results of that. Maybe there wasn't even a film in the camera, and he was making fun of us. Anyway, he really was joking around, following Pierre with his camera, and when suddenly he stopped it and changed in what I would say a professional behavior, like he had realized that this is not an adequate thing to do with us in his way of thinking.
It is very sad that this beautiful shot at the studio and in the park of East Hampton was in such sad condition. What happened to the original material? This is the last existing copy, you said.
Yes. I'm very sorry for that, too. I really can't recall where I put the original material. I guess it stayed in New York when I left for Paris in 1980. It's a miracle that, to me, that I could found this copy that we can see now. It's a low quality, but as you said, it's the only existing copy that remains. To be honest, I hadn't thought of all of this since the 1980s, and I still wouldn't if I hadn't seen the animation film at the Centre Georges Pompidou.
You said you were surprised of what you learned about George Cobb and Steve Elliott, so you had no idea of what had happened in 1986 when George was arrested for murder, and in 2009 when George died?
No, I had no idea. It really took me by surprise. Well, we talked about his temper. So my first impression when I learned that he was imprisoned for murdering Steve, I thought by myself that it would be possible. So it's a strange mixture of emotions I had reading about what happened, especially the fact that he was innocent and was released from prison in 2009 as a free man, that he was quiet about his innocence all the years is a miracle to me. I have no explanation. He, George, wasn't a bad person. He was just hard to take.
The object George is working on in your film is part of the Light Square series. It looks like the Light Square number 20 from 1970 to me. Did George said anything about this piece?
I thought the same when I saw what he was working on. And I asked him about it, but that was the only question I did ask him. He said that the collector had brought it to him for restoration, and maybe that was also a reason for his bad mood, because he was really pissed about it. Sorry, but there is no other word for a better description. He had to remove the whole front from the work to put new neon lights in it, and I think he didn't. He did the whole body new. That's what it looked like to me. But he was a fast worker, really fast. But he wasn't satisfied with the result. Maybe the bulbs or something else, the quality of the light was wrong, I don't know. He showed us the door shortly after he had finished the work. That was the last time I saw him. We took our equipment and drove back to New York.
In the end of the film, there is a short passage where you are visible in the front of the camera, shaking your head. Was his experience with George Cobb one of the reasons for you to quit working as a filmmaker?
No. In the 1970s, I tried to make my own films, and there were some interesting results, but in the end, I realized that my work as a film editor was more rewarding for me.
Thank you for your time and this private look in the life of George Cobb and Steve Elliott. This was Seth Whitman for WQXR Radio. And we talk with Michel-Antoine Seurat, the French filmmaker who did this short documentation about the life of George Cobb and Steve Elliott, A Rainy Day in East Hampton from 1978. And to the end, we play one more track from this wonderful album, From Left to Right, from Bill Evans, The Dolphin After.